Passage is 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the whole chapter. It's the famous love chapter. And we will be reading the whole chapter today. 1 Corinthians 13. And this is the New Living Translation. If I could speak in any language in heaven or on earth, but didn't love others, I would only be making meaningless noise like a loud gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I knew all the mysteries of the future and knew everything about everything, but didn't love others, what good would I be? And if I had the gift of faith, so that I could speak to a mountain and make it move. Without love, I would be no good to anybody. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would be of no value whatsoever. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. Love does not demand its own way. Love is not irritable, and it keeps no record of when it has been wronged. It is never glad about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, endures through every circumstance. Love will last forever, but prophecy and speaking in unknown languages and special knowledge will disappear. Now we know only a little, and even the gift of prophecy reveals little. But when the end comes, these special gifts will disappear. It's like this. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child does. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly as in poor mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete. But then I will know everything completely, just as God knows me now. There are these three things that will endure: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Have you ever tried to share the gospel to a complete stranger? The first time I did that, I was really, really nervous. I felt myself shaking. And I was surprised that the other person actually heard me to the end of the four spiritual laws. We may be enthusiastic about worshiping God. We may be enthusiastic about serving the poor or organizing a church event. But when it comes to evangelism, the passion evaporates like a mist in the morning. So often the call to evangelism produces guilt and despondency within us. And because the gospel message appears foolish to people, sharing the good news makes us look foolish. And we don't like that. And because evangelism is so nerve-wracking and difficult, many churches have opted for evangelism without the proclamation. And their favorite slogan comes from St. Francis of Assisi, who said, "Preach the gospel always, use words if necessary." It sounds like a nice soundbite, but it falls short of what the Bible teaches about evangelism. Jesus began his public ministry by proclaiming the good news of God's kingdom. When Jesus gained the reputation of a healer and a miracle worker, he responded by leaving that place, saying, "I must go and preach the good news to other villages." And he says that is the reason why he came. He didn't come just to do good works, but he came to preach the good news. You know, it is much easier to do social justice, to do community service, because you get some recognition by the world as nice people, as nice folks. And it is much harder to proclaim the good news of Jesus because the world will persecute you. They will ridicule you. They will make fun of you. They'll oppose you. But the gospel is good news, and it was meant to be proclaimed with our mouths. It is a story to be told. And if we don't proclaim it, people will not hear the good news and they will not know Christ. And God's reign of peace, God's reign of life and freedom will not be available to people. Now, evangelism is difficult because the whole burden of leading someone to Christ falls on one individual. You know, there are very rare breeds of people who are very good at, sharing the gospel and sharing their testimonies and bringing people to Christ. I mean, I've heard of this one person in Korea who brought 100 people, literally 100 people to church, and they shared the gospel and they brought them to church each year. Every year they bring 100 non-Christians to church. I mean, that really is a gift. But that doesn't mean that, because we don't have that spectacular gift, I'm not going to evangelize. That's not what I'm saying, right? I'm just saying that most of us are not very good at evangelizing. And, maybe the burden of evangelism should not fall on one individual. Maybe the burden was meant to be shared with others, with other Christians, maybe with the whole church. The gospel word, the message, and the gospel community, the church, are closely related. The gospel community embodies the gospel and proclaims it and lives by it. A person named Leslie Newbegin describes the local church as the hermeneutics of the gospel, or the interpretation of the gospel. John 13 contains one of the final speeches of Jesus before he was crucified. And Jesus says that it is the hour of his glorification. And he feels like a father leaving the disciples as orphans. And in that crucial moment, Jesus gives this last command. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." When Paul talks about love, he writes that having love is more important than speaking in tongues, more important than having great faith that can move mountains, more important than acts of great charities. Why does he put so much emphasis on love? It is because the Corinthian church was divided into factions. And Paul emphasizes love as the glue that holds the members together. It is what keeps the unity of the church. And that means that love is essential in a Christian community. And Jesus sets the bar really high when he says, "We are to love others as I have loved you." As Jesus have loved us, as Jesus has loved us, we are to love in the same way. And that's a high bar. That's a high standard. And Jesus, to prove his love, he ultimately died on the cross and gave himself for us. So before we are to be disciples of Jesus, before we are to be preachers of the good news, before we are to be church planters, we are to be lovers of people. Loving others is the test whether we have truly understood the gospel message and its power. And it's not the orthodoxy of our doctrines, as important as it is. It's not our brilliant strategy in church planting. It is not our commitment to Bible study, as important as it is. The test is our love for one another. And such love is evangelistic. Such love draws people to Christ. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul described how he shared the gospel among the Thessalonians. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share not only the gospel with you, but also our lives as well. Our lives, because you have become so dear to us. You know, there are forms of evangelism that does not involve sharing of our life, like street evangelism or door-to-door evangelism, just, you know, straight for spiritual laws, or revival-style meetings. But then there are other people who share their lives, that they open up, and yet they are very reluctant to share the gospel message with others. But when you look at Paul, he did both. He shared the gospel with his mouth, but he also shared his life. He loved other people. There's a person named Tim Chester in England. He is a church planter, and he helps other church planters build churches. And his own church is called The Crowded House. And in his church, there was a guy named George, and he was very enthusiastic about going to streets and doing street evangelism. He was kind of a gung-ho guy for Christ. And he asked another guy named Matt. He said, "Matt, why don't you come with me and let's go do street evangelism?" And Matt and another leader of the church, they met with George, and they talked about a different way of evangelizing. At first, George thought the two were selling out. But Matt and the other leader talked about building relationships with non-believers and sharing our life with them. Making an effort to get to know our neighbors and get to know our co-workers. It was about evangelism that was 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. About opening homes and inviting non-Christians, our neighbors, to have dinner with us. Then suddenly this gung-ho guy, George's tone changed. "I'm not sure if I'm up for that kind of commitment." You know, people want a form of evangelism that, you know, we can insert in our busy schedules and switch off and then just leave it there when we go home. But Jesus calls to a lifestyle of love, a lifestyle of evangelism. It involves building relationships with our neighbors and building trust. It involves sharing our lives with other people. Because of this relational aspect, Tim Chester says that evangelism may not work well in isolation. He says evangelism is best done when non-believers come into contact with a Christian community. So Christian community is vital to Christian mission. When others see Christians loving one another with Christ-like love, the power of the gospel message is communicated. The life we live together counts in the eyes of the skeptic world. When Jesus was on the earth, the invisible God was seen through Jesus. He said, "When you see me, you have seen the Father." But, you know, Jesus went back. He went back to the Father, and we cannot really see God right now, right? Because we don't see Jesus. Then how can people see the invisible God today? They can still see God through the church when we love each other. 1 John says, if we love one another, God lives in us, or God lives among us, and His love is made complete in us. When people see us living in love and sharing our lives with other Christians, the invisible God is made visible in our community. So the church needs to be seen as a community of love. And people need to encounter the church as a network of relationships rather than a meeting you attend or an event that you go to or a place you enter. Mission involves not only a contact between a non-believer and a Christian, but a contact between a non-believer and a group of Christians in a community. We need to build individual relationships, sure, but we also need to introduce non-believers to the community of the gospel. That's when they can see for themselves the gospel community in action, loving others, accepting others, being gracious to others despite differences. People are often attracted to the Christian community before they are attracted to the gospel message. We know a person named Augustine, maybe one of the greatest theologians and church fathers of all time. Before he became a Christian, he was involved in a very strange and bizarre sect known as Manichaeans for nearly 9 years. He spent 9 years of his life being involved in this strange cult. In his confessions, he says that it was a sense of brotherly love that attracted him to this group, not really their philosophy or teaching, but it was their sense of, it was a community of love that attracted him to that group. And you know, that is a deep human longing. We all long for a community. We long to be a part of a meaningful and a loving community. That's our longing. In my former church in Michigan, many of our church members lived in the same town, like Northville and Novi, and they were living in neighborhoods and very close to each other. And there was a sense of community about them. When one of their kids, grows up, they would, give their clothes to other families. We did this at our church too. Thank you for your some of your clothes. when a mother has a doctor's appointment, other moms would volunteer to take care of the kids while she's in the hospital. And when someone is pregnant, and we do this at our church too, people would cook meals and bring meals to that family. And when someone has to, buy some furniture at IKEA, another family would volunteer to lend them their minivans. And my wife and I knew this non-Christian, and her husband was Caucasian, and he was Christian. So we saw him every Sunday bringing their daughter to church, but we almost never saw the wife. She was Korean, but she never came to church. She would come once in a while. And although she didn't like coming to church, she came when moms got together for coffee and cake. And she came when some of the families got together to go to the Detroit Zoo, which isn't that great. whenever there were these social meetings, she would come in and attend. And she would see how our church members would interact with other people. And for 3 years, although she's been invited to a course called the Alpha Course, which is a course designed for non-Christians, to introduce the Gospels, she resisted for 3 years. But I heard this year that she said yes, and she's attending the Alpha Course. And I know that through that church, she will come to believe in Jesus. And I know that, because if she had a negative impression about our church members, about their life together, then I don't think, she would ever come to the Alpha Course. But she said yes, because she has seen for 3 years how they lived and how they loved. That is why she was open to the gospel message. Tim Chester says, too much evangelism today is an attempt to answer questions people are not asking. Is that even true? He says, too much evangelism these days is an attempt to answer questions people are not asking. It may be better, he says, to let them experience Christian community first. And we should not worry that, our church is less than perfect. I mean, there is no perfect church, right? No perfect church. And Christian life is not about how good we are, but how great God's grace is.
graces.
Our love and respect for other people despite our differences. Our gracious attitude toward other people's failures. They are greater testimony to God's grace than our pretense at perfection. When people see God's love and a sense of purpose in the gospel community, they will want to learn about the gospel message. And Tim Chester received the following email from another church planter. And this is what it said. I was talking with a Chinese non-Christian yesterday. He said he finished one Bible course when he first came to United Kingdom, but had almost understood none of it. A year later, he wants to study the Bible again. He told me it's because he has seen the lives we live and the decisions that we make. He says that everywhere in China and UK, people try to find happiness in money. But he noticed that we aren't chasing after those things. We do not find our identity in jobs and careers, like so many people he knows. So he thinks that there must be something real in this. So he wants to study the Bible with us. This is the kind of impact a Christian community can have on a non-believing person. According to Chester, there are three strands of evangelism. One is building relationships. Second is sharing the gospel with our mouths. And the third is simply introducing people to the gospel community, the church. And these do not come in any order. It doesn't matter which one comes first. And here's an example of how it works. You meet somebody at your work, and you get to know that person a bit, and you invite that person to a game of golf or a dinner at your place. And, you know, you just say, oh, there's going to be a few other people that I know who's going to join us. And they just happen to be church members, right? There's no agenda. The only agenda is to really get to know that person, you know, to take genuine interest in that person as a human being. And you're just playing golf or you may be having a meal and a conversation, but you are introducing part of the church to that person. And as the relationship develops, you can drop hints of your Christianity in your conversations. And for example, you know, when a church member mentions a concern, you can say, oh, let me just say a quick prayer for you right now. So, you know, you're kind of dropping hints of your beliefs. And then later, maybe you can ask that person, hey, we're going to study the Bible together. Would you like to you know, join in and explore what Christianity is? I'm a Christian. Would you like to explore it together with me? And you can invite them to a small group or to a church event. And when that person does show up to a small group or a church event, he would not feel so out of place because he would already know some people in the church. He's already built relationship with some people in the church. And it's at that point, you know, that's the point when you or someone else can share the gospel. And that's what really happens at his church, the crowded church. There's a guy named Fred, and he's been trying to get Luke to church, but he hates all churchy meetings. But he comes to church, he comes when church members get together to watch the soccer game in the pub. And he comes when he's invited for dinner at someone's house. He comes when some of them went to hiking together. And when he eventually came to a church meeting, he already knew a lot of people in the church, and he felt comfortable. And he says, church was kind of like, you know, the former meetings that he had, except of some singing and some Bible thing. But he felt comfortable. And almost a year later, Luke became a Christian. And that's how he plans churches. You know, people asked him if they can come and watch how they do their ministry. But he says that all they do is just ordinary things. And ordinary people are just doing ordinary things. So he says there are no special projects. There are no programs at his church. There are no special ministries. He says there's only a commitment to building relationships, modeling the Christian life in love, and talking about the gospel as a natural part of everyday conversation. And it says, the foundation of gospel ministry is low-key, ordinary, day-to-day work that often goes unnoticed. Gospel ministry is ordinary people doing ordinary things with the gospel intentionality. And I think gospel intentionality is important because at times when we have built a relationship, we are afraid to share the good news because we fear that it would jeopardize that very relationship that we have built. And that's why it is important for us to be determined, to have the priority that our goal is to share the good news. And in some ways, you know, I see our church doing this already, naturally. I saw one family inviting a non-believing family to the bowling night. I saw one family inviting a non-believing family on Easter Sunday. And I saw another family inviting a non-believing family to a small group meeting. So this is kind of happening naturally in our church as well. So these are, you know, ways we can introduce non-believers to the gospel community. So from now on, let us live our ordinary lives with the gospel intentionality. In the future, maybe we can invite our friends and our neighbors for a dinner with other church members. And let us find some ways to introduce our friends to the church, to the community of the gospel, so that they can know us and see how we live and how we love. Jesus said, by this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. So let us practice this evangelistic love. I want to close with this. Can we turn to a person next to you and say this, despite your faults, I'm going to love you anyway. Can we say that? That's right. Despite your faults, I'm going to love you anyway. Amen. Amen. Let's pray. Our Father,